From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Colton Paulus is in the house, and we have a brand new camera, so we are going to look good. If you're listening to this, it's the same old audio, yeah, but if you are watching this on YouTube, you see if you can notice between the old cameras and the new. We get this three camera setup, and one of the cameras is brand new, and Scott, my man, tells me it is better than the rest. So anyway, enough about me and my camera setup. This is about Colton Paulus and Anchored Tiny Homes. This is like one of the fastest growing companies in the region, and the product is really interesting. The story of Colton and him recruiting his family in to build this business, super interesting. So we're going to dive into all of that and hopefully learn a little bit about how you scale a company like you guys are doing. It's really, really incredible. Welcome to the show, Colton.
Yep, thanks for having me on. I look forward to it.
Yeah, so, okay, you and I've been kind of tracking you from a distance. We've known each other a number of years, and you've had some good ideas in the past and kind of got them off the ground, and then you kind of maybe switched to another idea or two, yeah. And, you know, always impressed me with your ambition. But now the results are beginning to speak for themselves. So maybe just give me a little of the background.
That's right.
What led,
that's right.
Maybe just give us your origin story, if you will.
Yeah, so I played sports growing up. So I was a college athlete, went to Colorado State, played Division I football. When I got out of college, my first job was actually selling insurance. So didn't really know a ton about business. I didn't really have the like door-to-door knocking story, selling things door-to-door. I was focused on sports. But then when I got out of college, I came home and got a sales job selling for Farmers Insurance, working for a guy by the name of Bob Nielsen locally. Mm-hmm. Actually fell in love with the sales process. I was like, oh, I could call someone, sell something, get a commission. Call someone, sell something, get a commission.
A lot of people don't like that.
That's
you
right.
Like
I
it.
Loved it. I loved it. It was like a drug to me. So I got really addicted to the sales process. But, you know, I wasn't really living a quality of life that was on par with my goals. So I was drinking quite a bit, partying, really not living a life that I'm living now, right? So anyway, so I ended up one night when I was working for Farmers Insurance, I ended up getting into some trouble. So then what I did is I actually pivoted from selling insurance to launching a mobile app by the name of Athletes Entourage. So that was the second kind of business that I started. Athletes Entourage was a mobile platform connecting athletes to, professional athletes that wanted mentorship and coaching and all that different stuff. And then that never really took off. So I pivoted to Morfit Incorporated, which was the same thing, but fitness influencers. Mm. And that had a little bit of success. I think I had maybe 100 subscribers at a time, 185, but never really did what I wanted it to do. And then I pivoted again to a company by the name of Fresh Water Bottles, which was a stainless steel water bottle company that had a cause associated with it. And then the fifth business that I started was DMC Media, which was just a local marketing company. All of these different businesses had a little bit of success, but never really had the success that I wanted. So then after DMC Media, I ended up getting married to my wife. We were kind of building it together at the time. I think I had 15 clients, local businesses that we were supporting on a marketing level. And then what happened is we stopped that business. I tried to get my insurance license one more time, and I actually got denied because of my past. So, there was a DUI. There was things I got expelled from a university. So the insurance committee actually denied my license.
Oh.
So I was doing really well. I was selling for like 6 weeks because I got approved tentatively, and then they looked at my file and denied it. So I was kind of...
What was that emotion? Were you like heartbroken? You're like, I put so much into this.
Yeah, there was a ton of time. I actually failed the test twice, right? So I put a ton of time into it. I was recently married. My wife was pregnant. We were having our daughter at the time, 4 months from now. So I was panicked. I'm like, I got to provide for my family. What am I going to do? So anyway, so I started researching different things. I had always looked at different businesses and wanted to start companies. But what happened is I actually got an ad on Facebook from a competitor, a tiny home competitor. And I kind of got gripped by it. So I ended up researching, what is a tiny home? How do you build them? What does it look like? All these different things. And then I went to my dad and I said, hey, Do you think we could build tiny homes? He said yes. I threw up an ad on Facebook, and within 3 days, we had 300 people reach out. So I kind of had that aha moment, like, okay, this might, there might be a market here. And then really the rest was history. We ended up meeting with four people at like a Starbucks, Pete's Coffee. I ended up selling two people at this coffee shop over the course of 2 weeks. I think our first contract was like 80,000. The second one was 95. And then really the rest was history. We started going all in. January of 2020, we landed a finance partner, and then we started selling 5 to 7 of these a month over the next 12 months.
Oh my gosh. So let me make sure I understand the time frame, because this all happened in a relatively short amount of time. So the first 5 attempts,
we'll call it. That's right.
That's over what span of time?
That was
that 5 years.
That was about five to six years.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Happened pretty. You were quick to pivot or whatever.
Right.
Fail fast, they say. That's really cool that you were able to, I guess, not meet your expectations and make a new decision really quick. Did people ever accuse you of being like flighty or indecisive?
All the time.
Dude, what are you into now? I'm going to admit, I even thought that at one point.
That's
I'm
right.
like, I thought you were doing insurance. What happened to the,
That's
you know?
Right. Yep. Yep.
And I'm like, okay. I always thought you were ambitious and
That's right.
so tracking, but now you're onto something. I've seen you in the Business Journal getting recognized for the high growth and, so maybe tell me what the company looks like today, and then we'll kind of back into some of the lessons learned along the way.
That's right. So the company now, we have 72 employees. We'll eclipse 100 million in system-wide sales this year.
Wow.
And so it's grown like crazy. And this has been 4 years. So we went from zero to 100 million in sales in less than 4 years. And like you said, I started a ton of different things, and I still have 1,000 ideas a week. I have to hone myself in sometimes. I'm like, hey, no, let's focus. This is what's clicking. This is what's working. But yeah, it's been fun. We've scaled it fast, built a great team. I think one of the things I've learned recently that I didn't do the first 3 years is hire very skilled people. And I feel like I waited too long because I'm like, oh, that salary's high. You know, can we afford that? Mm-hmm. But I think now I'm realizing actually pre-hiring those skilled people makes you so much more money.
Yeah. You held off on it because, hey, you're an early stage company.
That's right.
You're not in a position to go hire the best and the brightest necessarily.
That's right.
So you sort of cut back in those areas and you're saying that was a mistake.
That was a mistake.
Did it cost you?
It cost us. Yeah.
In what? Opportunity?
Opportunity, operational excellence, like, you know, because I'm more visionary, right? Mm-hmm. And then, so we've really needed an integrator or multiple integrators. There's a book, Traction, that I really like.
Yeah.
So I think we just waited too long to hire skilled people in each category, design, permitting, and construction. And we just wanted to do everything ourselves for a while. But now we've pivoted and we've done that the right way. So it's been helpful.
Well, I remember I knew your mom and dad a little bit. And your dad built sheds at one point, if I remember correctly. He had a successful business that built sheds. And then obviously we went into the financial crisis. And then this surfaced after the financial crisis you're the youngest son, right?
No, I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest?
So my brother's 29, I'm 32.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you come home and you guys get it rocking, kind of put the shed business on steroids you're building tiny homes.
That's right.
And maybe I'll stop for a second and have you describe for our audience, what is an anchored tiny home look like? What does it feel like? What's the value there?
Yeah, so a tiny home, we started the business with tiny homes on wheels. So we were manufacturing, we had a warehouse, we had a 25,000 square foot warehouse at one point. But in 2020, California came out with a law that said any residential lot can build ADUs, so accessory dwelling units. So we pivoted again, right, and saw the opportunity. We started getting customers asking us weekly, do you build ADUs? Do you build ADUs? And finally, I'm like, yeah, we build them. And then we ended up just saying, you know, we kind of created some models and went into that. So we're actually not doing tiny homes on wheels anymore.
Okay.
So an ADU is an accessory dwelling unit. So think of it as a backyard home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's where you might put, you've got a limited sized lot potentially, and I think the ADU lots or laws, excuse me, regulations require you to, or allow you to build something up to a certain number of square feet.
Yeah. 1200 square feet.
Okay. So these are homes that are under 1200 square feet.
Correct.
They fit in, let's call it your backyard or somewhere on your property, and there's a regulation that basically allows us as landowners or homeowners to do that regardless of where our property is located or anything like that. There's not really the set of restrictions you might have had in the past. Now it's like, no, it's you can put at least one of these on your
house. So the state came in and took the control out of the city's and county's hands. So the state said, no, every residential lot has to allow, every city and county has to approve ADUs on a residential lot. Just because of the housing crisis that we're in, we're not going to catch up with single family homes. They had to think of a different new alternative.
What a concept. You can use your own lot, your own land to build a place.
That's right.
I mean, in the state of California allowed us to do that.
I know. That's cool.
You know, it's interesting how people get, you know, cities and different municipalities, they put all these building restrictions codes on us, and to have something that takes some of those barriers away, that's freeing, and it has to be really something that allows people to maybe have their mother-in-law stay at their place, or you know, have doesn't have to be in the same house with you. You build your own little house, or maybe even a little rental. What's the best?
So our breakdown common? is 70% is family. So aging parents, grandma's getting old, kids coming home from college, and they just can't afford a $600,000-$800,000 house. So you know, the family might own a piece of property and they want to build a 800 to 1200 square foot house. I mean, we even sell 200-300 square ADUs. So 70% is for family, 25% investor, and then 5% just a wealthier client that just wants, you know, some more room on their property. But when you think of investor, it's actually not people with 40, 50, 60 rentals. A lot of times it's someone that just wants to supplement their mortgage. So they might have a $3,000 mortgage payment and they build an ADU and they can cash flow $800 to $1,000 a month. And all of a sudden their mortgage payment goes down, or they have that free cash flow.
Okay, so they are renting them to somebody to help their cash flow. Okay.
That's right, yep.
So the only time I've been in I haven't been in your guys' tiny homes. I was at a trade show, like a home and garden show, back when I was helping my concrete company sell concrete.
Yep.
I would go to the home and garden shows all the time. And I remember walking into these tiny homes and thinking, this is really cool. But they're tiny, right? So you're saying they started around 200 or 300 square feet. And that's, I mean, that's 10 by 20 or whatever.
That's
20 by 15.
That's right.
What can you get? Can you even get a bathroom and a kitchen and all that in a 300?
Yeah. So our smallest model that we sell is 240 square feet.
Okay.
It's a 12 by 20 and it's just a small kitchen and a bathroom and it's a studio.
Okay. So you have like a hide a bed where you have one of those beds that like
Murphy
tuck
bed
into the wall? Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah. So, and then they go up to 1,200 square feet.
Most people are right around the 500 to 800 square foot range.
Yeah.
So one bed to two bed unit is most of what our consumer is.
And are there walls? I mean, are you like, you know, in these small ones, would it be, you say one to two bed, is that one to two bedrooms or is that, you know, just couple twin beds and
one room? To two bedrooms. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes. There's a wall separating then for a little privacy.
So the way they'll lay it out, we get creative and all kinds of stuff. Maybe a 10 by 10, 10 by 12 bedroom. But yeah, people put beds in them.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then they share the yard potentially for his common area to,
that's right,
to play or run around or whatever.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So what you mentioned, maybe this is my impression of what you said, is that we don't have enough housing in California, or I guess across the country.
Across the country, yeah.
So this helps solve that by just making it more affordable, just a slap up a quick home or put a really affordable home together.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it does two things, right? So it cuts the red tape from restricting people, right? From building what they want on their property. And then the second thing is it really enables that entry level buyer to have somewhere to live. Mm. So, you know, these big home developers are building anywhere from 1800 to 3,500 square foot homes, but that cuts out the people that are making 60, 70, 80 grand a year and they can't buy a house.
So how do you buy one of these ADUs or what's the purchase?
You can't buy them, but maybe it's a family compound, mm-hmm. and they're kind of putting money into one pot where they can share some of the benefits.
Okay.
So like, let's say the mom is moving on to the property. She sold a house in the Bay Area, maybe had $160,000 in equity, and then she puts that $160,000 into the kids' property, right? So then they're kind of both benefiting.
Right. I love that. As you know, I think you might know this, we're building a family compound right now, and we haven't done any tiny homes yet, but when you said have your mom move out there, that kind of
That
put me off a little bit. I want my mom passed away a while ago, but I'm not sure I want my mother-in-law
living out there.
So it's like, you know, hopefully my wife is not listening to this podcast, getting any ideas. I don't think I want a tiny home. I wouldn't mind having a tiny home. I think that'd be cool. But maybe for my grandkids when they get older, I don't know if I want my mother-in-law out there.
That's right.
Hopefully she's not listening.
Yeah.
Okay, so you really are addressing the housing crisis that we have. Interest rates have come up.
Yep.
It's tougher and tougher to buy a home. It's forcing us to want to, I guess, stay in our homes longer, mm-hmm. because if you've got a home with a 3-4% interest rate,
that's right.
You're not really, I mean, the market isn't set up so that you can trade up really easily, because you trade up and you may have gone to an 8% interest rate mm-hmm. loan. It's like, well, my God, I can't even go sideways.
That's right.
So people, you know, but you want to continue to improve your lifestyle and make changes.
Yep.
Move to a tiny home. So have the interest rates hurt or helped you?
I'd say it's neutral.
Okay.
So it's hurt us in the more affluent buyer. So someone that maybe owns more rental properties wants to, you know, do a HELOC and then add a rental unit. So that it's hurt us. But when it comes to the parents and the housing for family, it hasn't hurt us because we're still the most affordable option. So when it comes to an apartment complex that's $2,000 to $3,000 a month versus a care facility versus financing an ADU, on a HELOC, it still is the most affordable option. You can finance a $200,000 ADU for $1,800 a month.
Okay, so HELOC, home equity line of credit.
Correct.
So that's, you've got your first on the house already, and you decide you want to put up a tiny home. You go to a traditional bank and get a home equity line of credit.
Correct.
And then you know, say you get $150,000 line of credit. You put some of it into this.
That's right.
Into this tiny home.
Yep.
And then is that interest only, or you got to pay those? Are those termed out, or
There's a few different options.
Like?
There's variable rates. There's fixed rates. Most of the time, it's spread out over 20, 25 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. And do you guys get involved when you sell it typically directly to the consumer, right?
Correct.
So it's somebody who owns their own home that's buying it. There's no middleman in there.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you help coordinate the financing piece and all that kind of stuff?
So. We're truly a white glove service. So we handle everything from finance to design to permitting to construction. So we brought on a director of finance that's a licensed mortgage officer. We don't do the loans. We just play quarterback and kind mm-hmm. of figure out where it needs to go. So
yeah. Well, so in terms of that process, maybe walk me through that process, because I'm kind of not the loan process necessarily, but how you quarterback that. We hear about you. We say, hey, you know, I'm interested. You go, you do a site visit. How does it start?
Yeah, so we have an ADU expert that we call them that will come out to your site. We have 18 now. They'll visit your site, measure for utilities, kind of ask you what you're looking for. What's it for? Do you want a one bed, a two bedroom? We'll stake out their lot, you know, kind of figure out what they can build first and foremost with the setbacks, with easements, with trees, power lines, all those different things. Once we figure out what they can build, then we'll draft up a proposal, and some people make us draft up five 5, 6, 7 because they're not sure exactly what they want. And we're willing to do that because we're a custom builder. And so we'll kind of walk them through that whole process. If they're interested, we'll ask them if they have financing. If they say, no, not lined up yet, I do have a local credit union. And then we'll say, okay, let's connect with our internal team and at least we'll help kind of guide you through this process.
Gotcha. Yeah. What about the permitting? So I'm, as I mentioned, I'm building that family compound and I dealt with permitting issues and, you know, crossing property lines because it's like 74 acres and building multiple houses and stuff.
Yeah.
And so what are the biggest like hiccups that happen throughout that new construction process? Because it's from it's a ground up house.
Yeah. So you mentioned it when we were talking earlier, but PG&E, SMUD.
I wasn't going to say it. PG&E has got me right now, man. They've got me by the
utility companies. They're just, they're understaffed right now and they're just slow. They take a while to get back to us. So we're implementing things where we submit even before we have the permit, just so we're getting way ahead of it.
I was wondering if you were having PG&E issues or so, and SMUD, so you deal with, well, you don't just build them in the Sacramento area. So correct. It's SMUD, PG&E, I guess. So what's the geographic footprint of the company?
So we're all the way kind of in the North Bay all the way down. So we'll service like the East Bay area, San Jose, Silicon Valley, all the way down to Sacramento.
Okay. So that geographic area, that gets you up to 100 million.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really cool. You mentioned, I think as we were walking around earlier, that some of this is turning into a franchise model.
Yeah.
Maybe walk me through how you came across, how you decided to go that route, instead of just doing all these employees and building them all yourself.
Yeah. So there was actually a customer that reached out. I was the original sales rep for the company. So I ended up meeting with this client, talking to him about ADUs. He wanted to build like 15 on different rental properties. And he was just like enthralled with our business. And then he told me, he's like, hey, I've been in the franchise business for 25 years. That's what I've done. And then so I started researching day after day. I'm like, this might be a good opportunity for us to grow and not need necessarily maybe venture capital or private equity right away. Mm-hmm. Not saying that's off the table forever. But so I just started researching after he told me about it and walked me through. Ended up reaching out to kind of a franchise brand builder that helps you with your FDD, with your, getting legal, all that different kind of stuff. And this was in 2021.
You weren't even considering franchising until this guy started talking about it.
Wasn't, weren't even considering it. Yeah. We were just going to grow corporate and just launch new markets. Mm-hmm. And then he brought it up and I'm like, man, that's a really cool, interesting idea.
Yeah, it makes sense. I had a guy on my show. I may have even told you about this maybe when we talked a while back, is Paul Porter. He has Premier Pools and they have a local, there's a local Premier Pools here. But then he spun off and created a franchise pool service and they grew like crazy.
Oh, yeah, it's huge.
And it's like, if you can create that system,
that's right.
You can, because people, I get this all the time, Mark. Hey, I got this service company. Yep. How do I scale it? Or I got a construction company. How do I scale it? And it's a lot of times it's very, very difficult to scale some of these kind of businesses. But basically, you're creating entrepreneurs.
That's right.
Right. So that's right. Somebody who knows how to build a house or do construction, they can basically take your brand.
That's
Is that what happens?
Yep.
They take your brand, your system, your formula, and apply it in their market.
Totally.
And you grew that way. All you need to do is find these entrepreneurs.
That's right. And we have 41 of them. So we've grown in the last, we launched in April of this year. We've sold 41 territories so far.
Wow.
It's insane.
Yeah. And they're all in California.
No, these are actually nationwide. Okay. So Austin, Texas, Tampa Bay, Florida, Orlando, Florida, kind of all over.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So in terms of you were describing your geographic footprint, was that just for, let's call that the company owned builds?
Yep.
And then you franchising the rest of the country?
Yeah. So we call it corporate. Some people call it company owned outlets.
Okay.
But it's corporate and then franchising.
Mm-hmm.
Corporate is the one that's going to do 100 million. And then franchising is so early that it's probably going to do 2.5 top line. And then we have obviously our royalties, our revenue.
Right.
That's what we're really excited about. Is that part can grow. It's kind of a blue ocean. I don't know if you've read that book, mm-hmm. but nobody's really franchising ADUs. It's so early on that we feel like if we could scale this super fast, we can be the dominant player.
Yeah. And with your marketing background, I have to imagine, obviously, it's helped you to grow your business, but to systematize the marketing, because so many construction people, marketing is not necessarily their forte. They may be good at swinging a hammer or making sure things come together. They're organized a lot of times. But marketing a business is like, oh, wow. You guys do lead generation and stuff like that for your franchisees?
Yeah, that's our biggest component. So we brought on a guy by the name of Clay. He's our VP of marketing, and he was with us from day one, and he's really helped us scale. I mean, he's a genius. He's one of those just marketing gurus. So we work really well together. We handle all of the marketing for our franchisees. So they'll pay us kind of a flat fee for the marketing, costs. And then we'll run all of their Facebook, Instagram, Google, and paid media. And then we'll actually book the appointments on their calendar.
Okay. So the ADU seems like a blue ocean, very big market, that a lot of people are going to see the affordability piece on, hey, I can put a nice small home in in my backyard. And because they're newer, it's a newer concept. There's almost unlimited growth. I mean, there's just a ton of people that are going to discover that this opportunity exists.
That's right.
And so you could have the entire United States as your market.
That's right.
And it take a long time to saturate that market.
Oh, big time. Yeah, because the thing is new laws are being passed nationwide. So like different cities and counties are starting to allow ADUs. So we're still at the very, very beginning of this being even approved nationwide. I think eventually it will be because it's happening month over month. By the time we get to scale, a competitor might just be so far behind that we're the dominant player.
Have you looked into using tiny homes to help solve the homeless crisis? I mean, there's so many people that are throwing ideas against the wall, it's a difficult issue.
Yep.
Have people approached you about that?
They have. It just has never really worked out because, you know, our units are anywhere from 90,000 to 400,000. So we are affordable, but we're actually building a custom home. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of these homeless homes are sheds or, kind of cheaper options.
Okay.
And we're not set up for the manufacturing to be
That's not what you guys are interested in at this stage. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. So your dad, you recruited your dad, you recruited your brother.
Correct.
Yeah. Tell me about the dynamics of working. Like, I know your dad. He's nobody to mess around with. Yeah, neither are you, but like your dad's like a mountain of a man, and you're the son, you're the kid, but you're running the show.
Yep. Yep,
right.
Yep.
So,
well, we all are. I'm more the visionary idea guy. My brother's a true operations guy. So he manages from the time the job sells all the way through the process and oversees the team to do that. And then my dad's the construction guru. Mm. So we wouldn't be where we are on the construction side of things without him. And I think what we did early on is we set the tone to say, let's stay in our lanes and let's stay in between the lines. Right. So I think a lot of family businesses, they take things personal. We will scream at each other and we'll have an argue match. Right. But it doesn't leave the office.
Okay.
Right. So like, we're like, hey, we still want to watch football on the weekends together and hang out. We're not going to take this emotional moment in the business outside.
So that's an interesting thing. There's a family business association here in the Sacramento. There's a couple of them. I'm a member of them, even though ours isn't quite a typical family business, but there's a lot of those kind of issues that I guess that we all contemplate. I grew up in a family business, and there was obviously there's screaming and yelling and, brothers and sisters and mom and dad. My dad was on the volatile side compared to the average, and my mom wasn't going to take any crap off of anybody. So, I grew up in one of those families. Not like there's some similarities.
That's right.
But I'm wondering, is there like a rule that, look, anything goes, but it's all about the unity of the family in terms of like, that's first.
That's right. That's by far first, right? It's faith, family, and then business, right? And it's like we have huge dreams and we have big goals, but at the end of the day, if we all hate each other at the end of the day, why is it even worth it? It's not worth it. So we made a decision early on that we were never going to take offense and we were never going to take what happens inside the business, outside the business.
Okay, so that's interesting because we, you know, I remember growing up as a kid when my dad had a TV shop, and my parents would talk. There's two things we talked about at the dinner table, and it was the business and football, right? Because we all played football. My sister didn't, but all the boys played. We had played football, and that was the only thing that got my dad talking. If we're talking business, winning, if we're talking about football, winning. So I hear other people saying, and I don't know what your philosophy is on this, to compartmentalize, like leave that at the office. Mm-hmm. And don't talk about it around family dinner on Sundays? Yeah. Or is it okay to come? Because you guys are really into this, where your wife and, you know, maybe even your mom. Mm-hmm. And is your brother married?
He just got married about a month ago.
So sometimes the spouses feel left out of some deep conversations at the dinner table. Do you make a conscious effort to sort of compartmentalize it? Hey, don't bring, building tiny homes to the family dinners?
We do the best we can. So like there is a rule. My wife would be like, hey, okay, not tonight. Right? You know, okay. So, but it's about 80-20. So 80% of the time we try not to. It will come up. I mean, we're literally building this thing together. Yeah. There's new things that happen.
There's so many. Growing a company, especially an early stage company, when you're growing like this, I mean, there's decisions that you just didn't expect yesterday that you got to make today.
That's right. Yep. Or even at night. Sometimes you're at dinner and it's like, I just got this email. What do I do? You know? Yeah. So, but we've done a good job. We try to keep it as separate as we can, but you can't fully do it.
What do you guys fight about? Just curious. And how does that go down? Does your dad play position power because he's a father?
No, he actually doesn't, surprisingly. But just about ideas and speed of growth. I'm kind of like a push the envelope guy. So, you know, and they're like, hey, let's take this step first and let's do this. And I'm like, hey, let's push the envelope. We can build the biggest company. So maybe like speed of growth.
So you're what gives everybody like confidence. You're the one that says, yes, we can.
That's right.
Who's the one that says, well, wait a minute, you know, hold your horses, gentlemen.
My dad and brother.
They're both a little bit like that.
So sometimes I'll get outvoted, right?
You need that balance, right?
Yep.
That's cool.
So it works out really well.
Okay, so in terms of like, did you guys decide, so you guys are obviously the next gen, but you guys are you equal partners? Yep. How did that go down?
We're all a third. So
nice.
We decided, you know, he had his contracting business before, and we just decided when we started this business, let's go all in together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's been the, I guess, the biggest surprise from a challenge standpoint, like from a difficulty standpoint in building this? Because right now it sounds like, wow, everything's going great. We made the decision to pivot or, you know, start franchising and we're tracking for 100 million. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody out there listening is going, dang, dude, that's fast. What surprised you in terms of like having to overcome an obstacle?
I would say, everybody's dealing with this, but finding good subcontractors and contractors has been tough. Mm. So if you're out there, recruiting enough subs has been tough for us.
What subs right now? So I own a concrete company, and I got a security company that's kind of in construction at some level in casinos. But we're dealing with subs a lot as well.
Right. Yeah.
What subs are the toughest to come by right now?
I would say electricians and plumbers, and then finish carpenters are kind of our biggest three bottlenecks right now.
Okay.
A little bit on the concrete side and a little bit on the framing side, not quite as much as electrical, plumbing, and finish.
And it's because it's so big, your dad and brother aren't out there swinging a hammer or doing anything like that. No. So,
they're not ever out in the field. We have, I think, 9 or 10 project managers, a construction operations director. So it's at the scale where we're truly working on the business as much as we can, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but also have to field customer, you know, calls and things like that.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Well, okay. So maybe you can maybe give me a little bit of what's the vision. So you're at 100 million. Your vision gets a lot bigger. When a lot of people, they might set out, hey, we want to build a $100 million company. Mm-hmm. And that seems like it's so far away. Well, you guys are here 4 years later and you're on track to do that.
Yep.
Have you had to like expand the size of your dream a little
bit? For sure.
What's it look like?
I think it expands at each level. So at first it was like, let's get to 10, let's get to 50, let's get to 100, right? So now we're here. we believe we can build a multi-billion dollar portfolio of companies over the next 5 to 10 years. And so what I mean by that is Anchor Tiny Homes is going to be the bread and butter for forever, right? And we're going to scale this thing through franchising. But we just launched what's called Anchored Brands and then Hello Builder. So two of these entities are basically centered around helping service brands scale through franchising. So Anchored Brands is actually going to be a portfolio of franchise brands in the HVAC, in, you know, all the service brands. And we're going to kind of build this infrastructure to help those companies scale.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So the tiny homes piece is one leg of the stool, if you will. And I discussed pools with about Paul Porter and Premier Pools.
That's right.
What other of these services are most ripe for franchising and maybe disrupting the traditional model?
So a lot of it. So roofing has been huge. Roofing has grown tremendously over the last 2 years in the franchise space. Landscaping is another big one. Like specialty electrical contractors is a big one. So high end finishes.
That may be a way for you guys to get your subs. It just create a leg of the stool that says franchising for, I don't know if finished carpentry is going to be a franchise, but roofing, I could see that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I would think that it has to do with the things that people are more likely to want to advertise and things like that. Yeah.
Yep.
Landscaping.
So landscaping, roofing, plumbing, electrical, HVAC, really any service brands.
And when you say service, are you talking about the recurring revenue type service brands, or are you saying more like the companies that you're building something from start to finish and the transaction ends?
More like the transaction would end.
Okay. Now, HVAC, more like a construction company.
Construction companies, yeah. But HVAC and plumbing, you can have kind of that monthly or annual service fee. So there will be that component, but we're just going to help these companies franchise and then take a royalty at corporate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. What did I not ask you? What else do we need to cover? I feel like I was zipping through on my agenda, but I want to make sure we stay on your agenda too.
I think I'm excited to be, I mean, I know you believe in this big time, the Sacramento region and really growing a big entity out of Sacramento. I talk with Greg Connolly a lot and, you know, we want to build a multi-billion dollar company to help put Sacramento on the map. Like I just really believe in helping this town become an entrepreneur's town, less of a government town, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there needs to be more people that see, you know, my success, and we're at the ground floor and we've made mistakes and we're not perfect, but I do think people like you sharing your story, and that's why I'm trying to get kind of our company out there more, is I believe people need to hear the story of successful entrepreneurs in the Sacramento region.
That's, I love that. I mean, that's the reason why I started the show in the first place, is I felt like I didn't have that, let's call it the older brother, or, you know, I mentioned, you know, my mom and dad, they got sick a long time ago. I didn't really have anybody that had success that was close in my life. That's that, right. I could sort of think about emulating or aspire to be like. I didn't know those people.
That's right.
And I think most small business people don't know those people. People don't really have good access to,
that's right,
you know, like the Greg Conleys or you or Dale Carlson,
that's
Sleep
right.
Train.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you find out how they did it?
That's right.
Okay, I wanted to start a show so that that's other people could start to feel that.
I love it.
And that, you know, I now it's fun. Now it's like I'm sort of addicted to it too.
That's
because,
right. Yeah.
You know, I keep learning and being sort of surprised by the innovative mindsets of young people, or even people that are, you know, older, my age type people, that there's still a lot of innovation and a lot of drive out there.
Yep.
People just need to feel like, well, if Colton Paulus and Mark Haney, if those
schmucks
can do it,
that's
come
right.
on, man.
That's right.
We can
do it too. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what,
And there's
awesome.
Way smarter people, right? It's like, I just stayed with it.
Yeah. He didn't quit. Look at him. A lot of people would have quit after,
right.
You know, a couple of those setbacks that you mentioned. It's like,
that's
well,
right.
geez, I'm just better go get a rig. I just better go get a job with the state or something
totally.
Like that. And
yeah.
So I'm like, no, I'm staying. I'm going to still dream big, baby.
That's right. That's right. I knew, right, just with the way my mind works and operates, I knew I always was going to be an entrepreneur when I started in this journey. And so I just knew I was never going to quit. And eventually, if you don't quit, something's going to click.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think you've inspired whatever our audience is, you know, and I think that's a good takeaway, is don't quit, and you'll eventually figure it out. And that's you may have to pivot 4, 5, 10. Lord knows I've pivoted a lot in my time. Right. And you're going to be pivoting, folks. But if you don't quit,
that's right.
You can figure it out.
You can figure it out.
Well, thanks for coming on the show today.
Yeah, appreciate it, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're an inspiration. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Means a lot.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.